Welcome back. Joining us now is Dr. William Makis, MD, and he has a very active Substack where he's trying to give people information about the harms that have been done and with this vaccine. But as we got a hold of him to talk about some things that we didn't get to the last time he was on, I noticed that they have expanded, the wellness company that he is involved with has expanded into Canada. So thank you for joining us, Dr. Makis. Tell us a little bit about your expansion into Canada.
Thank you very much for having me. The wellness company was established to provide an alternative, basically an alternative healthcare provider to, you know, those that have been captured by the pharmaceutical complex. Mm-hmm. So on the board is Dr. Peter McCullough, Texas cardiologist, Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Richard Amerling, Dr. Heather Gessing, and Dr. Harvey Risch. Mm-hmm. They are now expanding into Canada as of yesterday. They've established a wellness company Canada, and I've been asked to be on the board of that new company, along with Dr. Paul Alexander, Dr. Mark Trozzi, Dr. Julie Poness, and Dr. Richard Hodkinson.
Yes, yes, good. And so people go to your Substack, they can find you got a discount code there if people want to get involved. And of course, there is the wellness company TWC.health in the U.S. as well. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the things that people, if they are concerned about, if they've taken the vaccine or they have loved ones who've taken the vaccine, maybe some things that they can do help to guard against some of these effects or maybe to counter some of these effects. We'll get into that. But I want to talk first about something we didn't get to the last time you came on the program, and that was your specialty, cancer. You're an oncologist, a nuclear medicine specialist, and there's something that was on your Substack a couple of weeks ago about turbo cancer, but especially about young children ages 11 through 21. Tell us a little bit about that.
So since the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccines, we are seeing a rise in cancers across the board. Now, these cancers are different, you know, and the medical establishment is completely ignoring this. They're basically saying that, you know, because of the lockdowns, people didn't do their regular screenings, and that's why, you know, we're seeing a rise in cancers. They admit that there's been a rise in cancers, but they're saying that there's absolutely no link to the COVID-19 vaccines. Well, the reality is that the COVID-19 vaccines severely damage the immune systems of a lot of people. And the immune system is absolutely key in protecting us from cancer. You know, we get cancerous cells or mutated cells created in our body all the time. And it's the immune system that destroys those cells to make sure that they don't establish themselves into a tumor and spread throughout the body. Mm-hmm. Well, we know that the mRNA vaccines were actually designed to suppress the innate immune system to sort of get through that initial shield that we all have so that the mRNA wouldn't be destroyed by the immune system, you know, as soon as it's injected. Mm-hmm. So it was modified to interact with receptors on immune cells called toll-like receptors. And we know that it, you know, it suppresses the signaling of T cells. Mm-hmm. Now, this was, you know, again, sold to people as something that, you know, wouldn't be an issue down the road. And it was temporary just to allow the mRNA survive. But, you know, the reality is that people's immune systems are being severely damaged. The Cleveland Clinic study proved that recently, about a couple of months ago. You know, they did a study at the Cleveland Clinic of 50,000 employees, where they found that the more COVID-19 vaccine doses they had, the more likely they were to get infected with COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Which proved that, you know, the immune systems are being damaged. Lots of people's immune systems are being damaged. And so some people seem to lose that protective shield against cancer. And then we have these very aggressive cancers that arise in vaccinated individuals. You know, this sort of non-medical term has been coined turbo cancer. And that really reflects the nature of these tumors. They're extremely aggressive. They grow very, very rapidly. And they spread very quickly. They reach stage four very quickly, and then they metastasize, and they're catching oncologists off guard. And now this is happening in young people, even as kids as young as, you know, I have a case, kids as young as 11 years old. They can kill you usually in less than a year, but in some cases, especially the leukemias and lymphomas, they are now killing people in a matter of days. Mm-hmm. There's one case where a girl, 13-year-old girl, was diagnosed. She was in Georgia. She was diagnosed and she was dead in a matter of hours after being diagnosed with these aggressive leukemia. So this has been really concerning. And, it, you know, the medical establishment is trying to sweep it under the rug, but it's happening. You know, you can see these stories all over social media, and it's very, very alarming.
So is this, you know, we have different types of cancer. So maybe you have like a renal carcinoma or something like that. And this might still be like a, you know, renal carcinoma, but it's growing much, much faster than a renal carcinoma would normally. Is that what we're looking at? A lot of different types of cancers that are growing very, very rapidly?
Exactly. So we're seeing leukemias and lymphomas much more, you know, aggressive and spreading more rapidly than what we're used to. Now, you know, the leukemias, it's interesting because the spike protein from the COVID-19 vaccine does get into the bone marrow. And in fact, Moderna boasted that, you know, the mRNA can not only get into the bone marrow, but it can actually transform stem cells, you know, that create new blood cells and so on. So they've boasted about this, that they have the ability and the technology to do this. But we're seeing it in other cancers where we're seeing a spike in breast cancers, colon cancers, lung cancers, you know, gastric cancers. But again, they're behaving unlike anything we've seen. So, you know, I've had several breast cancer cases sent to me of young women in their 30s. Now, usually this would be associated with some kind of a genetic mutation, like the BRCA mutation. But in these cases, these tumors grow, you know, they'll grow from a centimeter to 10 centimeters in a matter of, you know, a few weeks, maybe a month or two. Wow. And the oncologists don't expect this because this is not how breast cancer behaves.
Wow.
And the other feature of these cancers is that they seem to be resistant to conventional treatments, conventional radiation therapy and chemotherapy. They don't seem to respond well to conventional treatments. So again, we could be dealing with a process, you know, a cancer-causing process that simply doesn't respond to the typical treatments.
Wow, that's amazing. And of course, as we're talking about all of this, the whole idea that they fought like mad against from the very beginning to say, well, natural immunity doesn't matter. You know, you're going to have, we're going to redefine a vaccine to say that it is something, not that it protects you from getting a disease that is supposed to be vaccinating you for, but we're going to say that it just is something that produces antibodies. And then they push back against the idea that anybody who had been sick and had antibodies, well, that was just natural immunity. You still got to have the vaccine. It was absolutely crazy because, you know, the whole point of the vaccine was to train the immune system. And yet they would just throw that out and say, no, you still got to have the vaccine. Well, if your immune system isn't going to be trained by the real thing, how's it going to be trained by something that is fake, an imitation of a part of that? None of it made any sense to me from the very beginning.
Exactly. And I think this was one of the most egregious, you know, things that we saw during the pandemic, this denial of natural immunity and which we've never seen before, right? I mean, this was completely unscientific.
Yeah.
And this was a fraud. I mean, this was medical fraud that was perpetrated on the population to claim that, you know, natural immunity doesn't work or doesn't work in this case. There's actually studies that confirm that, you know, from the first SARS coronavirus, there are people who still have, you know, perfect immunity to the original SARS virus. And, you know, now that's going back almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. And their immunity is just fine, you know. And in fact, you know, there are some studies to suggest that the vast majority of people actually had immunity against SARS-CoV-2, which was because it was so similar to the first SARS virus that people's actual immune systems would have handled the second one just fine. Mm-hmm. And we would have had no need to roll out the COVID-19 vaccines at all if they had tested, you know, people's, you know, T-cell immunity, which of course we know they didn't, they refused to, and they denied natural immunity and they needed to, you know, so that they could roll out these experimental vaccines.
Yeah, there were a lot of tells, even for those of us who are not doctors, to look at this and say, okay, so you're now going to say that natural immunity doesn't mean anything. How in the world could a vaccine work than other tells to say, well, we got one solution and everybody's got to wait for that one solution, the vaccine. We're not going to allow anything else. We're going to demonize anybody who talks about anything else. All those things were tells that this was a different agenda that was at play here. But now we have, and I just talked about this earlier, Dr. Makis, so that there is a big increase, as you're talking about, that big increase in cancer and you know, decline in the immune system. We also have a big increase that is being shown now by the CDC, by the equivalent health systems in the UK and in Canada, a giant increase in cases of AIDS, gone up by 338-fold. This is yet another thing that is coming through there. And of course, that is also related to the attacks on the immune system, isn't it? Could be.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it definitely could be. And again, you know, AIDS is not something that, you know, it's an umbrella term, yeah. Right? It's an umbrella term for, you know, acquired immune deficiency of well, any kind of cause, really, mm-hmm. Right? And so people are coming down with severely damaged immune systems, and they're probably falsely being labeled as AIDS, mm-hmm. Or AIDS of, and they don't look for the cause. But, you know, there's now a lot of evidence to show that the mRNA vaccines are definitely damaging people's immune systems. We even saw this in our data here in Alberta, Canada, where, you know, they rolled out the COVID-19 vaccines and they were tracking for a while how the double vaccinated were doing in terms of, you know, how frequently they were getting infected, what the cases were, what the hospitalizations and deaths were. And they found that over time, once people had their two shots, if you track them over time, you know, they were actually more and more likely to get infected, and they started filling up the hospitals. They started filling up the intensive care units, and they were dying. Mm-hmm. And when the data became so bad that it was embarrassing for the Alberta government, they actually took the data down off their websites because it was showing and that there was definitely severe immune system damage that was being caused by the COVID-19 vaccines.
And yet there is a continuing ruthless campaign of disinformation coming from, you know, like the Times in London, saying anti-vaxxers are a threat to global health, and a lot of other lies that are in that, saying, you know, if you get a vaccine, all the stuff that we've heard from the very beginning, if you get a vaccine, you're not going to die from COVID, and it's always the unvaccinated. It's exactly the opposite of what their own publications say, but they are so disconnected from the truth, and they have so much power to push this narrative that they can push out any kind of propaganda that they want. And they really are continuing with the same type of propaganda. It's amazing.
They're continuing, and it's almost like a doubling down. You know, yes. We're seeing a doubling down effort on the propaganda, especially, you know, when the propaganda started to break down once Twitter allowed thousands of silenced doctors and scientists to come back on, mm-hmm. and, you know, talk about what we're seeing, the reality on the ground that we're seeing, the harm that these vaccines are causing. There's, you know, they sort of, it looked like the pharmaceutical industry has sort of regrouped, and now through their, you know, control over the mainstream media and social media networks, it seems they're redoubling their efforts. You know, I've been attacked recently for reporting on the sudden deaths of young people who are, you know, either dying in their sleep or they're dying of issues they shouldn't be dying from in their, you know, 20s, 30s, and 40s.
Yes.
And so now they, you know, the other side has invented this new term. They call it ghouling, from the word ghoul, G-H-O-U-L. Mm-hmm. And they refer this to basically anyone who's discussing sudden and unexpected deaths that are extremely unusual. And, you know, like I'm, for example, simply calling for autopsies and investigations.
Yes.
And yet I'm being attacked for simply pointing out that young people are dying of issues that they shouldn't be dying. They shouldn't be dying in their sleep. They shouldn't be dying playing sports, you know, dropping dead on the field. They shouldn't be dying of, you know, cardiac arrests, brain bleeds, blood clots, you know, and they're dying in very high numbers of these things. And so now, you know, there's a tremendous effort to once again silence doctors and scientists who are pointing out, you know, all of these sudden deaths recently.
Yeah, to call that ghouling, and of course the other side did that quite a bit at the beginning. You know, they were saying, well, look, you know, here is somebody who died from COVID. And we were saying at the time, well, did they die from COVID or did they die with COVID? And you're magnifying this PCR test up to 40 cycles, and you know, you're magnifying the presence of anything by a trillion times. You're making these diagnostics here without doing any autopsies. And so we were questioning that, but they would jump on that in a heartbeat. And then when people started having reports of people dying right after getting the shot, or having other severe adverse reactions within just a few hours, they didn't have the term ghouling then, but they pushed back on that as well. But again, we want to just get the information. And now what we find out is that these invasive ventilators, we've had some new information coming out talking about how most of these people are dying from bacterial pneumonia. They weren't dying from COVID. It was dying from these machines that were giving them pneumonia and enhancing the bacterial pneumonia in that.
You know, it's shocking that the mortality rate for people who, you know, once they were hospitalized and they were put on these hospital protocols, you know, whether it was remdesivir, whether, you know, they were put on the ventilators, the mortality rate was very, very high.
Yes.
Again, we've had no investigations, you know, of this. Who put these protocols in place, these hospital protocols that were effectively fatal? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, I'd spoken to a lot of people who said they were so afraid to end up in the hospital and be put on one of these hospital protocols, either be put on remdesivir or be put on ventilators, because they were afraid that they wouldn't make it alive,
yeah,
you know, out of the hospital.
That's right. Yeah, I remember a pulmonologist going on record at the threat of his career saying, why are we doing this? This doesn't make any sense. We've never done anything like this before with these ventilators. I've called it from the very beginning. I said it was financially incentivized medical malpractice, because they were richly rewarded for doing the types of protocols that the government had decreed. And I just find it the most cynical thing to see Fauci now at this point pulling back and saying, well, I didn't close any schools, and I didn't do this, and I didn't do that. You know, I just made recommendations to people, you know, offers that they couldn't refuse type of things. And now he's disavowing himself of any responsibility for this. But I think people need to realize that we can't look at this and say that we've won, because they're now spinning this and saying they won. And they're now, as you pointed out, doubling down with regular media, with social media, with all the rest of this stuff. They're doubling down on their campaign, saying that it worked, saying we're going to do it again, and that the only thing that's in our way from doing it again are these crazy anti-vaxxers, and they're the enemy of public health. That's the tack that they're taking now, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, the censorship continues. You know, I mean, we have a respite on Twitter that we've had for a few months, and, you know, have the ability to speak out in a way that we weren't able to speak out for the first few years. But again, even with Twitter, you know, Elon Musk has just hired a female executive who sits on the World Economic Forum, on multiple, you know, boards at the World Economic Forum. And she's a pro-masker, you know, pro-vaxxer, and she's expressed a desire to silence, you know, individuals who are raising, you know, concerns about masks, about lockdowns, about the vaccines. So again, this is a very, very bad development. You know, I mean, we'll see. Elon Musk, you know, continues to promise that he will defend freedom of speech and so on, and yet he hires someone who, you know, you would expect from a social media, you know, company that is going to double down their efforts on censorship.
Yeah, I never really believed that what he was doing was really for real. I thought it was a few high profile people. And so actually, I said that, I put that in a tweet, and Matt Drudge put that tweet up. So my name is Mud with Elon Musk now, because I pointed that out. I said, look, he's brought back some high profile people, but I said, it's basically a beard. I haven't seen Twitter change for me whatsoever. As a matter of fact, I thought, well, let me give it a trial. I said, I'm done with Twitter. But then I thought about it again. I said, let me try it one more time. I'll pay for the blue check mark. You know, here's $8 and let's do this. So they put me on review. And the first thing they did was to block my broadcast, which had never been done before, marked it as sensitive material. They did that once. I complained a lot about it and sent tweets to him and stuff. They haven't done it since then. So I don't know I guess it's okay today, but they did that, I think it was last Wednesday. But I think that it is significant when you look at what is happening in Turkey. There's a lot of political unrest there. Turkey said they wanted Elon Musk to censor what was, you know, the opposition party, and he did it. And so you had some people who pushed back on him. And he said, what, did your brain fall out of your head? The alternative was to shut down this person, or they would shut down all of Twitter. So what should I do? Well, I don't think that's a hard thing to figure out. You know, maybe your spine fell out of the back. You know, if you don't have a backbone, you don't have integrity to say, we're going to go for free speech. I mean, that's always been my approach. I don't play the games because I get kicked off of YouTube. I don't play the games to say, well, you know, there's this thing out there talking about the vaccine. You know, there's this thing out there and you don't want to get the thing because the thing hasn't been tested. I never played that game. I'm not going to censor myself. If they want to censor me, they can do it. But I think it is it's pretty amazing where we are right now. That's one of the reasons why I think he put her in, just my opinion, Dr. Makis, is that the censorship is really going to be stepping up real soon, especially coming out of the EU and their new censorship app that's going to be coming in. It's going to have massive fines. I think he wants to step away from this somewhat. And he also wants to put somebody in there where he can have some plausible deniability to say, this isn't my idea. Maybe I hired the wrong person or something like that. If she starts doing things that everybody gets upset with him about, I think that's what it's really about. But I think it is going to get worse. I agree with you.
Yeah, that's very possible. And, you know, we see also from the Canadian government, you know, is pushing through bills, censorship bills as well. You know, they haven't started acting on it yet, but, you know, it's there. I mean, I think we're going to be facing, like you said, a new wave of censorship. And, you know, I sort of saw it coming because when you look at the uptake of the COVID-19 vaccines, the demand for these vaccines has plummeted almost to zero. You know, in Canada, which you know you would expect that a lot of Canadians were brainwashed and they would still be lining up for their booster shots. You know, Health Canada actually updated the numbers recently as to the you know how the population is taking the COVID-19 vaccines, and we're down to only 13% of Canadians are still taking their booster shots and have taken a shot in the past 6 months. Only 13%. That means 87% of the population hasn't taken a booster shot, is considered not up to date on their vaccines, and is basically done with a scam. And yet the Canadian government is building new factories to produce hundreds of millions of doses of mRNA. Who's going to take these vaccines?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So they're going to have to step up, you know, their draconian measures. And I think the censorship is part of that.
Yeah, I just had some official in Poland say to Pfizer, hey, these things aren't working and nobody wants them. Can we get our money back? It's like, good luck with that. They're not going to give you any money back on that. You got an article about what's going on in Japan as well. Skyrocketing excess deaths after the population was mRNA vaccine overdosed. How far did they go into it? Because I talked earlier about the fact that you still got 60% of the people after they've removed the mask mandates recently, still got 60% of the people who feel like they've got to have a face diaper on. So how were they with the vaccines in Japan? And what are we seeing there with this, with the excess deaths?
Japan is very interesting because Japan is 100% mRNA. You know, the vaccines that they distributed in Japan are basically 100% mRNA. It's roughly about 80% Pfizer, 20% Moderna. Mm-hmm. So they went fully mRNA. You don't have this, you know, mix of other vaccines in there that could cloud the picture. And they now have over 300 doses administered per 100 people. So that's more than three wow. mRNA doses for every man, woman, and child in Japan.
Wow.
A total of about 380 million doses and rising. And they are seeing now, there are, you know, Japanese doctors and even politicians that are pushing back against this. They're now showing the highest excess mortality since World War II. And the excess mortality is skyrocketing in the past 12 months. And especially in the past 6 months, you see the excess mortality is going almost exponentially up. Mm. And so it's an interesting, you know, example of a country that is, I believe they have the most mRNA doses per capita. And they are seeing absolutely skyrocketing excess deaths.
Wow.
Especially in the last few months, even though their booster uptake has sort of flattened off recently, the deaths are skyrocketing. And I think that's a sign. It could be a canary in the coal mine for, you know, what we're seeing in the other highly mRNA vaccinated countries. Of course, Canada, Australia, you know, New Zealand, Germany, Israel. And I think we are seeing increasing excess deaths, but it's being covered up by the governments. We're not getting excess death data from the governments, and what we get, and, you know, we get trickled in, right? We get little bits and pieces. Edward Dowd is sounding the alarm in the United States, mm-hmm. you know, based on the U.S. insurance data, and he's seeing excess mortality in the working population of, you know, 40-50% excess mortality.
Yeah.
So we have a serious problem on our hands. It's being covered up. You know, but I get flooded with these sudden and unexpected deaths in very, very young individuals.
And of course, you know, we're seeing this type of stuff. You mentioned the insurance data. You know, when One America, the insurance company out of, I think it's Indiana, when they looked at it and said, this is a once in a 200 year event. And the guy comes back and says, well, you know, they said this was people who, these were non-COVID deaths, but I know that can't be true. There's so many of them, it had to be COVID. And I know also that nobody dies if they are vaccinated. So this has to be unvaccinated people dying from COVID. Therefore, I'm going to raise their insurance rates. I mean, we see these kind of mental gymnastics everywhere. So the companies are using this stuff, massaging it around, spinning it however they want to, for their advantage, you know, so they can raise insurance rates or whatever it is that they seek to do. And then we see the governments that are trying to hide the information. And so people go around and grab the insurance data, or some of them have looked at the profits of the funeral home chains and things like that, so they can see this type of thing happening. But I was kind of surprised, Dr. Matius, when I saw this article about Japan, because I remember that they got rid of a couple of million twice, over a million doses. One of them is 1 million, another one's 1.2 million, because they found black particles that had particulated, you know, had out of this mixture. And I thought that was really strange, because I always was wondering, you know, well, what happens to this stuff if they don't keep it at a super cold temperature? And so they saw these black particles and they just threw away a couple of million vaccine doses. So I thought, well, maybe they're starting to catch on in Japan, but evidently not. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there was a brief period of time where, you know, it looked very promising for Japan. You know, they had rolled out ivermectin and allowed ivermectin to be used in the population. I do recall the story about the contamination of the, I believe it was Moderna vials. Mm-hmm. These, like you said, these metallic particles that they were finding in these vials that shouldn't be there. And yeah, so they had gotten rid of a few million doses, but apparently, you know, their, you know, mRNA rollout continued. And I was actually horrified to find out that they had administered almost 400 million mRNA doses. Wow. In that country. I didn't realize it was that bad.
I didn't either.
But yeah. They had gone very aggressive with the mRNA, and you know, now they're seeing the effects of that.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, and they even also were the first ones to have kind of a biodistribution study that showed how this goes throughout, travels throughout the body, doesn't just stay, you know, the shot at the injection site, but that it was spreading throughout the body and accumulating in so many different organs. So, yeah, I'd hope better for Japan, but unfortunately not. Let's talk a little bit about, you've got a lot of articles about pilots, and I think that's an important thing to look at. You've also got an article or two about school bus drivers dropping dead instantly, or people, you know, pilots having heart attacks. That is so important, because these are people who are driving the bus or flying the plane. And if they drop dead, a lot of people go with them at the same time. Tell us a little bit about what some of the stuff that you're seeing with pilots, because you've got a lot of articles pulling those events together.
And again, you know, this is an interesting recent phenomenon. I had done some articles in the past on my Substack about pilot incapacitations in 2021 and 2022. And there were some, certainly, and, you know, there were some incidents with small planes and helicopters that may have been, you know, pilots who were COVID-19 vaccine injured, had a medical, you know, medical event, medical emergency, and you know, the small plane or helicopter went down, you know, so there were these incidents. But now, you know, in the last, I would say, 3 to 6 months, it's almost skyrocketed, you know, the incidence of pilots becoming incapacitated in flight. These are large commercial planes, usually carrying about, you know, 200 or so passengers. And I've tracked about 10 pilot incapacitations on large commercial airlines throughout the world just in the past month and a half alone. Now, these are pilots who basically they collapse during the flight. Mm-hmm. Usually the co-pilot will take over, the plane is diverted to the nearest, you know, airport, and the plane is landed. So in all of these 10 incidents, the pilot could no longer act, could no longer fly the plane. They either became unconscious or they had a heart attack. You know, they may have collapsed. We never get the reasons why, because, you know, these incidents, they don't seem to be investigated. Yeah. Or if they are, we don't get any further information about them. And usually the co-pilot is able to land the plane. We haven't had any major airline disasters yet. But again, you know, we've had COVID-19 vaccine mandates, you know, for pilots, for crew, you know, for flight attendants. And, you know, I hear a lot from pilots now, and they're telling me that there's many pilots who are coming down with cardiac issues, cardiac injury after COVID-19 vaccination. And, you know, they're basically, you know, furious at the aviation authorities, that the aviation authorities are ignoring these problems. You know, instead, they're changing the parameters of the physical exams and EKGs that allow pilots with these cardiac issues to continue flying. Yeah. And, you know, that's not the answer to this. And so these incidents seem to be on the rise. And that's what's, again, that's what's shocking me, is that why is this happening? Why are these incidents rising in frequency?
So
I'm trying to, you know, document this. And, you know, there's young pilots that are dying, you know, unexpectedly. We just had an Air Canada and Air Transat pilot, 48 years old, died suddenly just a few days ago. And again, it's happening at a much higher frequency than before. Same thing with the school bus drivers. You know, you have this situation where you had employees who were mandated to take the COVID-19 vaccines to keep their job. Right. So they took their jabs, they kept their job, they came down with injuries, vaccine injuries, you know, to their hearts, other organs. And now they're driving a bus full of kids, and they're having medical emergencies. This is always described as a medical emergency behind the wheel. They're crashing the buses. You know, there was a story recently of a young boy that had jumped in because the driver was having a cardiac issue. Again, young bus driver was having a heart attack or some kind of a cardiac event, and a young boy had to jump in, take control of the wheel to make sure that the bus wouldn't crash. And, you know, there's been a number of these incidents recently. It seems to be on the rise. I'm trying to document them on my Substack and, you know, bring it to people's attention.
And of course, you know, we see it's an amazing video when you see the guy jump in, because I got the video cameras there to see what is happening with the bus driver and people getting in and out of the bus. And people don't say, well, you know, why are these things starting to happen more and more frequently? As you point out with these pilots, you got 10 of them recently, had two in May, and then you got April, March, starting from March the 3rd. And then it's amazing how they are stacking up here. And again, a population that was really coerced, you know, no jab, no job type of thing. Talk to us a little bit about any mitigation. What is there that can be done to mitigate this, if you've had the shot, or if you're concerned about vaccine shedding or something like that, coming in contact with some of this? And what can we do to mitigate this? Is there anybody come up with anything yet that you know of?
Well, first thing I want to mention is that, you know, a lot of people seem to be under the impression that if you didn't have reactions to the vaccine in the first few months, then you're fine. Then you have no risk of, you know, heart attacks, you know, blood clots, and so on. And that's just not the case. You know, people are really under this mistaken impression, because a lot of these sudden incidents, whether it's medical emergencies or sudden deaths, they're happening in people who've had their vaccines more than a year ago.
Yeah.
Right. So I believe we are seeing long-term effects of this vaccine, which were never studied, because they rushed the vaccines out. You know, they studied these vaccines in young, healthy people for a couple of months, basically even fudged the data and then rolled it out, you know, to billions of people, and made a lot of money doing that. But I believe now we're seeing, you know, longer term effects of these vaccines. The cardiac injuries are still there. The blood clot issues are still there. Neurological injuries as well. So, you know, the toxic part of the vaccine is the spike protein, the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. It's a very toxic protein. And I think that's why, you know, a lot of these incidents are being blamed on COVID. And they're saying, well, no, it's COVID that's causing this. It's because, you know, everybody knows that the spike protein is extremely toxic, highly inflammatory, causes inflammation wherever it gets deposited. And the fact that it doesn't stay in the arm and it circulates throughout the body means you end up with spike protein all over the body in places you shouldn't have spike protein. You get spike protein in the heart, spike protein in the brain, in the bone marrow, kidneys, liver, you know, ovaries, testes, you name it. Mm-hmm. And the spike protein seems to be, you know, detected or detectable in the blood for up to a year, maybe even longer sometimes. And now there's, you know, there's a possibility that the spike protein may be incorporated into our DNA. The mRNA could be incorporated into our DNA in some of the cells, and these cells might be producing spike protein indefinitely.
Yes.
So I think the mitigation strategies have really focused, at least those of us who are trying to help the COVID-19 vaccine injured, and even the people suffering from long COVID as well. You know, we're focused on mitigating the damage of the spike protein. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there are enzymes that break down the spike protein. Natto kinase is the major one that's been studied. It's been shown to be very successful in breaking down the spike protein. And again, helpful for the vaccine injured as well as people suffering from long COVID. You know, the wellness company that I've joined, their flagship product, it's called Spike Support. It has a good concentration of natto kinase, which breaks down the spike protein, breaks down blood clots, breaks down amyloid, which seems to be a problem with the vaccines, amyloid fibrils. You know, you get these strange clots that you saw in the movie Died Suddenly, these rubbery, white rubbery clots. That seems to be amyloid, again, from the COVID-19 vaccine mRNA. There's amyloid sequences in there. So natto kinase is an enzyme that's derived from fermented soybeans. It was discovered in Japan a few decades ago, and it seems to be very good at breaking down the spike protein. Helps a lot of people that are suffering from issues that may still have circulating spike protein in their blood. Because right now, we don't have a way to test. Mm-hmm. You know, to simply test if you're still half circulating spike protein that's causing all this damage. I believe those tests are coming. The wellness company is looking at maybe, you know, either developing or acquiring another company that would be, you know, producing those tests so that we can actually find out who is having the spike protein still circulating in their system. So natto kinase is this main thing that people can use to try to break down the spike protein in their system. There are other nutraceuticals or supplements that you can take that block the spike protein. Quercetin is a popular one that a lot of people are familiar with. Olive leaf extract, dandelion root, N-acetylcysteine, bromelain. So these are supplements that people can, you know, people can buy fairly easily. They're not expensive, and they are known to, if it doesn't break down the spike protein, at least it binds the spike protein, so you could mitigate against some of this damage that the spike protein is causing in people's bodies.
Well, that's some very, very important information to know, and because that's been one of the things that's bothered me so much about this, is because they've got to continue full speed ahead and ignore any of these problems. Nobody is looking closely. I'm glad that that you have and the people that you're working with have looked at some of this to see what we can do to mitigate some of this. But, you know, they're not paying any attention. They want to just ignore that it's a problem whatsoever and continue down the course. And they'll just kind of, you know, massage things around the edge and say, well, maybe we won't recommend it for this group or whatever, but we're not going to stop it. And we're going to pretend that there is no adverse events here. That was one of the things at the very beginning of this, Dr. Makis. When I looked at it and we started seeing these things popping up in the VAERS database of people immediately having reactions to it, I thought, this, I've never seen anything like this before, because we had talked about how long it takes. One of the reasons why the vaccine adverse event reporting system, even though we would see things happening, it would typically take a very long time between the time of vaccination and the time that you would start to have these effects. And so they would use that to deny that there was any correlation. When it was happening immediately after the vaccination, I was flabbergasted, and then even more flabbergasted that they would just ignore it and say, well, there is no correlation. When it was right after they had the vaccine, and we saw this over and over again. So that's the thing that's very different about this. And rather than raising a red flag to people, it's had the opposite effect, as you pointed out. A lot of people think, well, if I didn't have an effect right after it, then I'm not going to be, I don't have anything to worry about. And yet it does continue to build, like all of these vaccines have continued to build over a period of time. And that's what we're now seeing. After a year or so of this, we're starting to see a whole nother level of reaction to this. And I think there's another level of this, which is going to be population control. That's something that Dr. Yaden has talked about from the very beginning. Some of the earliest tests in the animals showed that it was accumulating to the highest density outside the spleen, was in ovaries, and everything else in terms of concentration was way, way down on the charts. So I think that's going to be the next thing that's going to happen, and that's going to take a while for that. And they can explain that away with a variety of different hand-waving techniques, can't they?
Well, exactly. You know, with the VAERS report, the fact is that, you know, we have tens of thousands of deaths already documented in the VAERS report, and half of those deaths occur within the first couple of weeks of vaccination. Mm-hmm. So, and that signal was evident, you know, almost from the very beginning. And the fact that those reports were denied or ignored, to me, really showed that, you know, this wasn't just incompetence. You know, this was deliberate. This was intentional. This was malicious intent behind this. You know, you can't explain this away just with incompetence, because the signal's there. That's right. And the fact that someone deliberately chooses to ignore that signal, and a signal that strong, you know, this wasn't like something equivocal. This, I mean, we're talking over 30,000 deaths, hundreds of thousands of injuries, and they're being ignored. Mm-hmm. So this was, you know, this was malicious. This was deliberate. And you're right, in terms of the issues when it comes to the deposition of the mRNA and the spike protein into the ovaries and testes as well. We're looking at potentially very serious issues with fertility. You know, there's a lot of chatter about pregnancy complications, issues with stillbirths, miscarriages. It's being heavily censored and suppressed.
Yeah.
You know, I'm starting to see pregnant women who are dying either during childbirth or very shortly after childbirth. And again, of issues that they shouldn't be dying from. They're having unexplained bleeds. They're having unexplained blood clotting issues. You know, and these are young, healthy women that are dying right around, you know, the time of delivery or shortly after. Again, so you're right. It may take a while. We need whistleblowers. We need whistleblowers to come out and you know, spill the information on some of this, because, you know, even here in Canada, in British Columbia, we had a hospital that had a lot of stillbirths over a very short period of time. People tried to come out, whistleblowers, and the healthcare workers who came out started speaking about it were heavily persecuted. They lost everything. They lost their licenses. They lost their jobs. So there's tremendous suppression of this, and we're going to need more whistleblowers to come out to blow the lid open on this issue of fertility, stillbirths, miscarriages, and pregnancy complications.
And I'm afraid that's something that's going to continue to unfold. That's why it's very important for people to focus on those supplements that you talked about that are available over the counter, or some of the other things that that you have that people have noticed that can help to try to mitigate or control or you know, pull apart these spike proteins. That is a key thing, and that information is not getting out there. It's good that you've got the wellness company. I'm so happy to see that some alternatives are coming out of this system. There was just a study last week, I believe it was, Dr. Makis, where they said about 30% of nurses either want to quit or change who they're working for because they've seen this. They've seen how corrupt this system is, how they were coerced. They've seen the financially incentivized medical malpractice that's going on. So I think one of the things that's going to come out of this are going to be companies like yours, a wellness company, who will try to focus on things that are going to help people to build their immune system, to try to control these spike things. It's very important to see that there. And it always is great to see your articles at Substack. Like I said, you've got a very active Substack there. Dr. William Makis, MD. Again, twchealth.health and twccanada.health. Is that correct, the one that just opened up?
That's right, yes.
And if you go to his Substack, Dr. William Makis, that's M-A-K-I-S, M-D, you'll find information there if you're in Canada. They've got an offer there for a discount that is their introductory offer for the new service that they're offering there. Very important that we start to get outside of this corrupt, failed healthcare system that is there. Thank you so much for all the information that you put out there. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Makis. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. We're going to be right back, folks. Stay with us.
The David Knight Show is a critical thinking super spreader. If you've been exposed to logic, by listening to the David Knight Show. Please do your part and try not to spread it. Financial support or simply telling others about the show causes this dangerous information to spread farther. People have to trust me. Trust the science. Wear your mask. Take your vaccine. Don't ask questions.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.